Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Pete Musto, Ann Ball, and Brian Lynn. Later, Jill Robbins and John Russell will have this week's Education Report. But first, United States President Donald Trump is traveling to 5 Asian countries early next month. Trump told reporters on Monday he is considering a visit to the Korean Demilitarized Zone during the trip. The DMZ is the narrow piece of land that separates North and South Korea. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence visited the DMZ in April. Christopher Hill is a former U.S. ambassador to South Korea and Assistant Secretary of State. Hill told VOA that every American president has visited the DMZ, and President Trump should too. Hill noted that the timing of a presidential visit to the DMZ is something to be considered. Ned Price worked for the U.S. National Security Council and served as an assistant to then-President Barack Obama. Price agrees with Hill's reaction to the idea of a presidential visit. He said, "The North Koreans would interpret any visit as provocative." Price told VOA that what the president says or does while at the DMZ would determine just how the North Koreans react. Any blustery language, such as what we've seen in recent weeks, would be hugely detrimental to the cause of a diplomatic de-escalation. During his trip, Trump will try to increase pressure against North Korea's nuclear weapons development program. He will also work to strengthen American economic interests in East Asia. Trump has helped to build support at the United Nations for international economic sanctions against North Korea. Those measures are designed to limit the amount of money North Korea earns from exports. The North uses that money to finance its nuclear weapons program. But the country has been able to continue nuclear and ballistic missile tests. Trump is likely to talk about the tests in his talks with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, South Korean President Moon Jae-in, and Chinese President Xi Jinping. Jack Keane is a retired U.S. Army general and once served as the Army's Vice Chief of Staff. He has close ties to the Trump administration. Keane warned North Korea against adding nuclear weapons to its intercontinental ballistic missiles. If North Korea does nuclearize its missiles, he noted, Trump will consider the decision an act of war by the North. He added, "We can say that war on the peninsula is not realistic, but if Kim Jong-un is going to bring it to that point, that is what is going to exactly happen." The Trump administration said Monday that the president's trip is set to begin on November 3rd and end on November 14th. It will include stops in Japan, South Korea, China, Vietnam, and the Philippines. Trump is to meet with the heads of state of each country.
Some experts believe North Korea's ability to carry out computer attacks is increasing. They point to a reported attack that took place in September of last year as evidence. Attackers, believed to be North Koreans, took thousands of military documents, including war plans aimed at destroying North Korea's leadership if war takes place. The war plans, known as Operation Plan 5015, were jointly created by the U.S. and South Korean militaries. Kenneth Gears is a security expert and a researcher with the NATO Cooperative Cyber Defense Center of Excellence, based in Estonia. Recently, he spoke to VOA. Gears said it is entirely possible that U.S.-South Korean war plans were taken. He added that it is possible that North Korea received help from Russia or China to do so. All digitized information, Gears said, is very difficult to protect. He said large computer systems often have many points that can be attacked, and North Korea knows who to target. He said one possibility is that North Korea may be trying to steal money. The country has been under increasingly tight sanctions after two United Nations Security Council resolutions this year targeted its export income. Another possibility, Gears said, is that North Korea wants to know if it is about to be attacked. In order to do that, they would need plans from the U.S., Korea, and Japan. North Korea has been linked to computer attacks that have caused notable damage in the past. In 2014, North Korea was blamed for entering the computer systems of Sony Pictures Entertainment. The attack caused many computers belonging to the movie production company to become useless. It was seen as a reaction to that studio's attempt to release the film The Interview. The movie showed an attempt to kill North Korea's leader, Kim Jong-un. More recently, reports from 2016 linked the theft of $81 million from the Central Bank of Bangladesh to North Korea. South Korea suspects North Korea has attempted attacks in recent years on computer systems of its energy system and some of its banks, as well as its military. But Gears does not believe that North Korea would win a cyber war with the U.S., South Korea, or other Western countries. He said North Korea's internet system is small and an easy target for cyber attacks that can limit or shut down its networks. Gears said cyber warfare can take many forms. It can involve secretly getting information and spying on computer systems. Cyber warfare methods also can seek to make changes to computer systems that limit or block advanced weapons from operating correctly. In the case of missiles, a cyber attack might block important information that is needed in order to fly a missile in the right direction. It is even possible to cause a missile to travel in the wrong direction.
And the computer might have no way of knowing that, that it's the right or wrong target. Computers don't think that way. They just respond to commands, and that way they can be very smart and very stupid at the same time.
One example of a cyber attack targeted Iran's nuclear program and was identified in 2010. The Stuxnet virus is said to have caused damage to computer systems linked to Iran's nuclear weapons program. I'm Mario Ritter.
Militias operating in Syria have declared victory over Islamic State, or IS, fighters in Raqqa. The militias raised flags over the city on Tuesday after a four-month battle against IS forces. Raqqa served as capital of the self-declared Islamic State militant group. The Reuters news agency said the fighting had ended, but noted that Kurdish and Arab militias were clearing a sports center of mines and any remaining militants. A spokesman for the Syrian Democratic Forces, or SDF, said his group plans to formally declare victory after the work is completed. The SDF has been fighting since June to take Raqqa. The militia has received help from the United States and its allies. The final SDF attack on Raqqa began on Sunday after a group of Syrian jihadists withdrew, leaving only 300 IS fighters to defend their positions. On Monday, the SDF captured Paradise Square, a place where the militants carried out executions in front of city residents. Some locals called it Hell Square, as bodies and severed heads would be left there for days. The fighters captured Raqqa's main hospital after fierce fighting Monday night and early on Tuesday, said SDF spokesman Mustafa Bali in a statement. The fighters then lowered the black flag of the Islamic State at the hospital, the site of an IS command center. One witness told Reuters that militia fighters and commanders celebrated in the middle of wreckage and ruined buildings around the square. An SDF field commander said explosions from mines killed three militiamen on Monday. Another commander said SDF fighters had found burned weapons and documents in the sports center. The fall of Raqqa is a sign of the Islamic State's collapse. It was the first big city captured by IS forces in early 2014. After a series of victories in Iraq and Syria, the group declared the establishment of a caliphate, with Raqqa as its capital. The Islamic State created its own laws, passports, and money. It used the city as a base to plan attacks overseas and to imprison Western hostages before killing them in videos published online. The group has lost most of its territory in Syria and Iraq this year, including the city of Mosul. In Syria, IS forces have been forced back into small areas in the Euphrates Valley and surrounding desert. I'm Pete Musto.
terrorism experts say the collapse of the Islamic State terrorist group in Syria and Iraq may not reduce its efforts to spread in Europe. European officials remain concerned that the group will continue to gain and radicalize European followers. They also say it may not reduce so-called lone wolf attacks in Europe. Kurdish-led forces supported by the United States are close to removing Islamic State forces from the Syrian city of Raqqa. The terror group has used the city as its headquarters in Syria. But French and Belgian officials do not believe killings will stop in Europe for the next few years. Experts say territory held by the Islamic State helped the group gain fighters from other countries. They say it also helped the group show it was different from the terror group Al-Qaeda, which opposed the creation of the Islamic State, or IS.
Al-Qaeda's leaders criticized Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi for naming himself caliph, or leader. Experts say one way for IS to show it still has power is to carry out attacks on targets in the West, like Al-Qaeda did. Last month, al-Baghdadi released a recording in which he criticized the United States. It was the first time he had spoken publicly in 11 months. In the recording, he called on jihadists to attack the Syrian government. And he said IS still exists, although it has lost much of the territory it had captured. He repeated the words of IS propaganda chief Abu Muhammad al-Adnani. He said holding territory was less important than the desire to fight. Al-Adnani is now dead. Al-Baghdadi also praised attacks on the West. He said America, Europe, and Russia are living in a state of terror.
French President Emmanuel Macron spoke about terrorism in August. At the time, IS had been ousted from the Iraqi city of Mosul, and Kurdish-led forces began their attack on Raqqa. Macron said the fight against Islamic terrorism is France's top priority. He said it would remain so for some time. Since 2015, a series of terror attacks has killed more than 240 people in France. The country has 350 Islamic extremists in prison and nearly 6,000 militants under surveillance. Belgium also has supplied an unusually large number of fighters to IS and other jihadist groups. French and Belgian officials say IS is very innovative. They say efforts to reduce the group's activities on the internet have not been very successful. The group makes changes to its messages, often to target possible recruits. It tests new ideas, much like companies that sell products do.
Charlie Winter recently published a study on IS for the International Center for the Study of Radicalization and Political Violence. The research center is based in King's College, London. Winter says the media war has always been as important for IS as victories in Syria and Iraq. He wrote that for IS, propaganda production and dissemination is at times considered to be even more important than military jihad. Winter says that although IS has lost much of its territory, it can still take part in information warfare and recruit and incite. And he says the international community must be equally as creative and strategic-minded in its approach towards counter-communications. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Ann Ball.
Writing may be one of the most hated exercises in a classroom. Rarely do students celebrate when the teacher asks them to do a writing activity. Joy Payton says there is a good reason for that. Much of the writing is often formal.
There are requirements for moving through the class to the next class and out of the program. And that requirement is often writing an essay.
Payton is with the Center for Applied Linguistics, a language and educational research organization in Washington, D.C. She says dialogue journals are an ideal alternative to structured essays. She says journal writing also can improve learners' language skills. Dialogue journals are ongoing written conversations between two people. They could be between a student and teacher or other English language expert. Or they could be between two English learners if one learner has strong English skills. The writing takes place for a period of time, such as a school term or year. With dialogue journals, learners write about subjects that interest them, and they can write as much or little as they wish. The teacher's job is not to judge the writing skills of the English learner or even correct mistakes. Instead, the teacher is an equal partner in a continuing one-on-one conversation.
So there's some sense in which we share the power to introduce topics, to respond, to ask questions, like we would in a conversation with a friend. That's not typically the way a teaching situation works.
That was Jana Staten, a counselor education supervisor at the University of Montana. She has done a number of studies on dialogue journals, some in partnership with Joy Payton.
One unusual thing about dialogue journals is that there is little or no correction of mistakes. But without correction, how do learners improve their English skills? Payton explains.
In this kind of writing, they're writing with another person who's a better writer than they are, whose language is more advanced than theirs, and they're motivated to do it because they're writing about topics that are interesting to them.
Learners improve a number of language skills by observing how the teacher writes and then self-correcting. Peyton and Staten say English learners take more risks in expressing themselves with the language because they are not being judged by the teacher, their classmates, or anyone else. Clarina Larada is associate professor in the Adult Professional and Community Education Program at Texas State University. She says dialogue journals can improve things like language fluency and confidence.
For me, dialogue journals is for helping them develop vocabulary, develop fluency, feel less scared about writing, feel more confident about using English to communicate. So my recommendation is that there has to be other activities in class where correction is the goal.
Larada says the journals also give learners a chance to do something that is usually quite difficult in a second language, forming questions correctly. And dialogue journals do not simply help learners, Staten says. Instead, teachers gain a lot. They learn more about their students, and this can help them feel like part of a community.
Dialogue journals are a low to no cost activity. The only required materials are paper notebooks or possibly a computer or other electronic device. If you choose an electronic device, Staten suggests avoiding email and using something like Google Docs instead. She says it keeps a clearer record of the conversation. Blackboard or other online communication tools used by universities may be another method. The writing can take place at the beginning or end of a class or in between two activities. And, Peyton says, it usually only requires about 10 or 15 minutes of class time. The frequency may depend on the number of students and the workload of the teacher. Larada suggests that if teachers have a large class, they collect some journals on one day and the others on a different day.
For subjects, Staten says, avoid the thinking of, I want you all to write about X. Instead, you might start the very first journal by asking the English learners what questions they have or what they think about what they're doing in the classroom. Or you can simply start with, tell me what your day was like. Once the learners feel at ease with what is expected, the writing can move to more personal subjects, those important to the learner. What does this person want? What are his or her goals and hopes? What is difficult for them, and what would be more helpful? Larada suggests that both the teacher and the learner include a few questions in each journal submission. This helps keep the conversation going, because it gives the reader something to react to. She also says ground rules are important before beginning dialogue journaling. One of her rules is to recognize the kind of questions you ask. And if you see an unwanted question, you have the right not to answer that question and suggest a different subject. The important thing to remember with dialogue journals, she says, is not to be afraid of making mistakes, because even native English speakers make mistakes. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.